are back. Adam Azer here with Greg Urbano for the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. It's been a little while, and I apologize for that.
It is your fault. You were out of town.
Totally my fault. I was working.
Yep.
I got to do some cool things, though. I got to cover some college basketball. San Diego State, BYU, UNC, right. Duke, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, Big East Tournament. Then I went to Texas. So it was fun. Yeah,
tis the season.
But I missed this.
Yes.
And now everybody around here is only talking about one thing, and that's the NIT. Because tonight Miami plays FAU, and we've got a lot of representatives from each school here.
That is true.
So everybody's excited for that. But we're going to talk about the NBA right now, and there's a new leader in the Eastern Conference, Greg, and that is the Chicago Bulls.
To the surprise of
48-18.
To the surprise of you, yeah. Not to me. If you remember last time we spoke, I did say
I don't remember
Chicago,
last time we spoke
because it was so long ago. I did say Chicago would take that one seed because Boston, as I know, and as most people who follow Boston after the All-Star break, they tend to have lulls. And they, of course, had one here.
And meanwhile, for all your tough talk, Boston's a half game behind the Bulls.
Yes. I know, but it's happening.
Okay, yeah, it's happening. But we still have about 15 games left in the season
right.
for a lot of these teams. The Bulls are 30-4 at home. They're the second best home team in basketball, so you better believe that number one seed could be very, very important to them. And are they the best team in the East? We're going to talk about that when we look at our power rankings. But, you know, the Bulls have won 8 in a row. Coming up on the show, we're going to talk about Carmelo Anthony. How can we measure him now that the Knicks are 6-6 and the Nuggets are 8-2 since the trade? We're going to talk about the Lakers and the Heat. They've had hot streaks lately. The Heat also had a cold streak since the last time we talked. Are you more worried about the Spurs who have struggled a bit or the Celtics? Kevin Love loses his double-double streak. And then we need to talk about Portland, Memphis, New Orleans. The bottom half of the Western Conference could be very dangerous in the playoffs. And is there any team that jumps out at you in the East that could be dangerous in the playoffs? But let's start with the Bulls, Greg. And you love them, so I'll just let you just do your thing
and
annoy everybody with your love for the Bulls.
Right. When they finally got fully healthy with the two bigs and Boozer and Noah, and obviously Derrick Rose doing his thing, I expected them to get even better than they were, and they were playing at a great pace early in the season with Derrick Rose just really running the show. And now that they're fully formed, they seem to now be comfortable defensively, obviously rebounding. They're a great team rebounding, but just the way they play defense, the way they defend the three, it's certainly what you look for in a playoff winning team that they can lock down and really defend, and that's what they're capable of doing.
Miami and Chicago, two best in the league at field goal percentage defense, and they're even, dead even there.
Right. So, and really the other part of the equation was Boston struggling after the All-Star break, which we've seen them do in the last couple of years ever since joining the Big Three, which could now be considered the Big Four. They do struggle after the break. Of course, they're a veteran team. Keeping that pace throughout the entire season is just a difficult thing to do. And they are, of course, dealing with some injuries in their front court as well as then trading away Kendrick Perkins.
That's the thing. People are losing sight of the fact that Shaq and Jermaine O'Neal and even Glenn Davis, who's back now, but they've all been hurt. And if you look at what centers have done to the Celtics recently, it's pretty remarkable. The Celtics have lost 3 of their last 4 games. And those 3 losses to very beatable teams, the Clippers, the Nets, and the 76ers. But look at what the centers did in those games. Clippers, DeAndre Jordan shot 9 out of 10. 76ers, Spencer Hawes shot 6 of 10. The Nets, Brooke Lopez was 9 of 16. So these centers are really tearing them apart. And it's obvious why. They don't have Perkins, and they don't have Shaq, and they don't. I don't know what kind of impact Jermaine O'Neal would have, but he's a body. And Nena Krstić is obviously not the answer there as a starting center.
Not defensively.
So Shaq is clearly going to be extremely important to them. Extremely important.
Which is tough. Do you want to rely on Shaq at this point of his,
career? Just to be a body, for defense.
But then again, I mean, you get him in foul trouble very easily. He's not nearly as swift of foot as he used to be. He's not going to be able to move as quick.
You truly believe the Bulls are better?
I absolutely believe the Bulls are better.
All right. Okay. This is the latest in the season. The Bulls have had the lead in the Eastern Conference since 97-98 when they won the NBA championship. That was their last NBA championship. And they have a very easy schedule the rest of the way. The next 3 games are New Jersey, Indiana, and Sacramento. I mean, they've got a lot of teams they can really beat up on in the home stretch. So there's a good chance they win the number one seed, and then can Boston or Miami or Orlando go on the road to Chicago and win? I worry about playoff experience with them. I worry that these guys, it's not that they're completely inexperienced. I mean, they've been to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Remember, they took the Celtics to 7 games a couple years ago.
Boozer's been in the playoff
runs. But they're not the Celtics.
They're not.
You know, and they're not even the Heat, for that matter. They're not LeBron and Wade.
Yeah.
although the rest
I don't
of that
buy
team,
too much into playoff experience. I really do think that the better team usually wins out in a 7-game series, and you know obviously experience is there is necessary when it's a close game down in the stretch. And I feel like the way Derrick Rose has played this year, he shows no fear. I don't see him going onto the playoff stage and really not playing as well as he has in the regular season. I don't see him choking in the playoffs just because of the pressure.
How about JaVale McGee? Triple-double, 11 points, 12 rebounds, 12 blocks. Most blocks since Keon Clark had 12 in 2001.
Who do you think could have named the last person to have 12 blocks would have been Keon Clark? I could have thought for hours and never come up with Keon Clark, although I do remember him playing. Good lefty player for the Suns and a few other teams.
Yeah, it was Toronto.
Could not have come up with that name. He's on Toronto at the time.
Yeah, so that was an interesting little factoid
there. Little tidbit.
So the Knicks are 6-6 since acquiring Carmelo Anthony. And Chauncey Billups is back in the lineup for them, and he took a terrible three-pointer down the stretch of that game early in the shot clock that missed. And he is the most selfish point guard in the league in the last 2 minutes of basketball games. He is the most overrated clutch player in the history of the NBA, and includes Kobe Bryant. And I can go on that rant over and over again. But the Knicks are 6-6, and meanwhile, the Nuggets are 8-2. And the Knicks defensively are just a disaster right now. And the Nuggets are playing much better defense.
That's right.
So how much of that has to do with Carmelo Anthony?
I would say a lot. I mean, really, when a team is predicated around a superstar player like Carmelo Anthony, they follow his lead. If his lead is not to be the hustling dive-on-the-floor defender or the guy who really locks up the person he's playing against, the entire team is not going to play in that manner. So, you know, when you look around, obviously the best example would be Kevin Garnett going to Boston. Prior to him going to Boston, they were not known as a defensive team. But you put a leader in place like that, everything falls into place. Carmelo Anthony certainly just does not take defense to heart, and you can see that with the entire team. Really, Denver, they didn't, even when Melo was out with injuries and things like that, when he was on Denver, they never struggled to score. They could always score, and they still can score. I mean, J.R. Smith, as good a scorer as anyone out there, just because he can light it up. Well, obviously not as good as like Kobe and those guys, but he can go for 40 on any given night if he lights it up from the outside.
He'll probably take 40 shots.
He can drive to the lane, absolutely, but he can score buckets. So the thing about that team was, what they gave up and then got him back in return really wasn't that much when you think about what they gave up with Carmelo Anthony. It's a lot of scoring,
a little
bit of rebounding, leadership, and absolutely for the long run, you know, for New York's, you know, view of what they're going to get a couple years from now to have Carmelo and Anthony there. Sure, that's great. They're going to sell more tickets. They're going to charge 50% more for those tickets. Good for them. But Denver definitely made out better in this deal, as we see.
I wish I had stuck to my guns when I originally said I didn't like the trade for the Knicks.
Yeah.
Then I kind of changed my mind, but now again I hate it. I absolutely hate
Especially
it.
After that win against the Heat, I think you were pretty happy with what you guys had.
When they beat the Heat, that was truly the most exciting victory the Knicks have had in years.
Yes.
I mean, years. It was amazing. It was a great game, and they were down by a lot in the first half, and I think they went on a 15-0 run to close the half. Yeah, it was an exciting game, playoff intensity, all that good stuff. But now you're seeing the Heat. The Knicks giving up just so many points. They gave up 119 points in their loss last night, and Danny Granger hits the game-winning shot, and it's just like, are you kidding me? Guard the guy. It was so easy. Make him go to his left, double-team him. No, he just pulls up for like a 15-foot jumper, and it's very frustrating to watch. Now, to answer the original question, I don't think the Knicks' poor defense has too much to do with Carmelo Anthony. I mean, that's a team-wide thing. But the Nuggets' improvement on defense definitely has to do, like you said, with Carmelo being gone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, George Karl is thrilled. You can read the Sports Illustrated article. He is happy that Carmelo's gone. They obviously didn't get along very well. He's coaching his team the way he wants to coach it now. He didn't want it to just become four guys standing around and watching Carmelo on offense. And this is what I've said. This is what I had said. I wanted the Knicks to trade for a superstar. Give up that much for a superstar, that's fine. This was not the right superstar because he doesn't do anything for you on the defensive end.
That's right.
And I guess that it's proving true. But the same point I'll make for the Knicks, I'll make for the Heat as well. When the Heat made these deals, we did not pick them to win the NBA championship. I don't know. Did you?
No,
I don't think
so. We picked the Lakers.
Yeah, we did not pick them. And I didn't think this was going to be their year. I said, all right, don't think they're going to do it in 1 year. You have to do the same thing with the Knicks. Maybe they took a step back to take a step forward later. When they beat the Heat, everybody went a little crazy. But maybe the Knicks really are going to take a step back this year until they can put more pieces around Carmelo and Amari Stoudemire.
But the biggest difference for me with LeBron and Wade, and maybe even a little bit Bosch, and Bosch not so much, LeBron and Wade play excellent defense, and they take especially Dwayne
Wade. No, but it's the point that let's remember what our expectations were before the season started, or in this case, as soon as the Knicks made this trade. So for the Heat, I didn't expect them to win because I thought their supporting cast was crap. Then they went on that crazy run where, what was it, like 20 of 21 games they won, something like that, earlier in the season. And I think people started to see, all right, they might actually win the championship. But now we're getting the reality check. They might not be the best team in the league yet. So let's remember what we originally thought about the Heat and remember what we originally thought about the Knicks and try to temper the expectations. But on to the Heat, Greg.
Yes.
What do you think about them lately?
You know, it's difficult to really say with them. Obviously, they're not fully formed yet. They still are dealing with injuries. Udonis Haslem, I think, is the biggest missing piece right now of that puzzle. If they do get him back for the playoffs, obviously it'll take a little while to get him integrated into the system. But in general, he's the type of player who's pretty easy to just stick out there. He rebounds the ball. He shoots that open jumper from the baseline.
What's he going to do, play center?
No, I don't think he'll do that, but I do believe he at least will spell some minutes for Chris Bosh. He'll provide a much better backup at the power forward position, and he'll be a good rebounding and defensive presence.
All right, but what do you think about them right now? I don't care about Udonis Haslem. This is what I'm talking about with the Heat. The Heat, they've had a terrible stretch where they lost 5 in a row. They got blown out by 30 at San Antonio. They lost at home to the Blazers, to the Knicks, and then, among other teams. And Chicago, that one-point loss to Chicago, and, of course, that loss to Orlando.
Yeah.
Then they go on this hot streak now where they beat the Lakers. They beat the crap out of the Spurs. What do you think about the
Heat? They're an emotional wreck. Now, if their emotions are high and they feel good about themselves, they can dominate anyone. If their emotions are down, as they were with that 5-game stretch, they could lose to anyone. So that's the crazy thing, is that as talented as they are, if they're not emotionally in it, if they're not really just feeling the fact that we are one of those teams, we are one of the best teams in the league, they don't play like it. And the weirdest thing about Miami, too, unlike really the top four teams or the top other five teams in the league, Miami, I feel, can win on the road anywhere just as easily as they could beat a team at home. Now, obviously, when they played San Antonio, to get blown out by 30, then they come home and they win by 30, you think, well, they're a much better home team. But I really don't see that being the case. I feel like Miami's one of those teams that it just depends on how they feel that night. Doesn't matter what arena they're in. If they feel
like
playing well.
No. Are you kidding? How they feel, that's going to determine if they win the championship.
I do believe.
I understand it's an emotional team.
So they get on a run.
There are a lot of teams that are emotional, and they're not just like, you know what, we feel like winning tonight, we're going to beat the Heat. That's not how it works.
I'm telling you, this team is driven by the way that they feel about them. Now, that win over LA, win over the Lakers.
I don't buy that stuff.
And you even heard Dwayne Wade after the game, I believe it was against San Antonio. He said the reason we really won this game is because we beat LA. We gained that confidence back.
Fine.
There's no more crying in the locker room. There's now this confidence has replaced that.
I'm not going to dispute that they're a more confident team than they were when they were losing 5 in a row. You can even tell from their quotes that they were. But it's not like they can just say, oh, we feel like turning it on tonight. We're going to beat the best teams in the
league.
Their
body language during that 5-game stretch, every call they would complain about. Now they're just they're back to playing basketball because they know
when they do
that.
And so are they, how good are they now? Are they the best team in the league now?
I don't think they're the best team in the league, no.
Are they going to win the championship?
I don't have them win it. I told you last time we podcasted, the Chicago Bulls would win the Eastern Conference, and I have not deviated from that.
So here's the thing with the Heat. Sunday, that game against the Spurs, is that on Sunday?
I believe so, yeah.
That game against the Spurs.
Yep.
You saw how good they can be.
Yeah.
That was basically the best the Miami Heat can play. And when they play their best, when they play up to their absolute best abilities, I don't think they can be beat. But they can't do it frequently enough because their supporting cast is not good enough.
Absolutely.
And that's why they're not going to win the
games
East.
Where LeBron's jumper's not falling,
sure.
Wade's fall away is not falling.
They were unstoppable in that game.
Yeah.
And as you always say, when the Spurs lose, they really
lose.
They
get blown out. That's their tendency.
Now, sure. I'm going to tell you about the Lakers, and I'm going to tell you why I still don't buy them. I still don't think they're coming out of the West. I buy them as a great team,
but
I don't think they're coming out of the West.
Wow.
I don't think they're back. I don't think they're fixed. Andrew Bynum is averaging almost 16 rebounds per game in his last six. He is on an absolute tear there. Now, in the 2 seed in the West, they are a half game ahead of Dallas, who they just beat. They've won 10 out of 11, and they lost to the Cavs right before the All-Star break, and a lot of people kind of buried them, and I sort of did too.
Yep.
I still don't think so, and here's why. I still don't think they're back. I just don't buy what they're getting at the small forward position, and I think when the playoffs come, they're going to need a small forward to sit in the corner and hit three-pointers or knock down open shots, and the last two championship teams for them have had Ariza and Artest, and this Ron Artest isn't as good as that Ron Artest.
Yeah, but Matt Barnes coming back, I think, has been a big part.
I don't know. He's not really playing the role I thought he would. But Artest, in a recent win over the Mavs, 5 of 8, hit both his three-pointers, 12 points, 8 rebounds.
And that's all they need from him.
But he hasn't been giving them that
this
year. If he can do that consistently, and that's a pretty darn good game, 5 of 8, 2 of 2 from 3, 8 rebounds, 12 points. But if he can do that or similar to that, then yeah, they can win the championship. But I am not buying that. I'm going to look at what I've seen all year from Artest. I think that small forward position will come back to haunt them. I think that there are other teams like the Spurs and the Mavericks that are more balanced than the Lakers and will beat them in the West.
That is true. I just think Bynum's resurgence, and as well as he's played, he can make up for the ineffectiveness of the small forward position. He makes their defense so much better. He really changes nearly every shot that's taken by the opposing team in the paint. He's either blocking it or just making them change the shot in almost every possession. So to me, that makes up for that, because we've talked about it all year, Ron Artest struggles, but I feel like Bynum has really shown that he can play well enough that the small forward position really doesn't need to do much for that team.
Are you more worried about the Spurs or the Celtics?
Much more worried about the Celtics. There's no doubt about it. Because they also, obviously they traded Kendrick Perkins, so they changed the makeup of their team, whereas the Spurs didn't really do anything at all at the trade deadline. So we see the same team there. They're just, they're a team that really needs to hit the outside shot. Obviously.
Who, the Celtics?
Yes. The Spurs.
Spurs.
The way that they play, you get Barnes to hit a couple, or you get Bonner to hit a couple threes. You get McDyess to knock down his inside jumper. So when they're shooting the ball well, they can pretty much beat anyone. And then on the nights that they don't shoot the ball well, as you know, they can get blown out or beat by anyone, even the Philadelphia 76ers, as we saw recently.
Yeah. I'm worried about the Spurs on defense. Their defense has been dreadful lately. They've allowed 99 or more points in 5 consecutive games.
They look slow. If you watch them, they look like a slow team. There's no doubt about it.
But you think so?
Yeah.
Lately,
well,
maybe.
Aside from maybe Tony Parker, they are... Not, I mean,
but
obviously the Heat just ran up and down the court on
them. Are firing on all cylinders, and they are fast, and they are fun, and they execute very well.
Yeah,
they don't have the athleticism that some of the other teams have, but I don't know. I can buy that.
Dwan Blair and Tim Duncan are not the most athletic guys you can have in your front court, and then obviously you bring in Bonner off the bench, like I mentioned. So they are not the best athletic team, but as you said, the execution, the coaching of Popovich. Clearly, they can still do what we expect them to do, which is get to the Western Conference Finals and battle with LA.
How dangerous is Portland? Portland scares me. They're probably the 1-5-8 seed in either side, either conference.
I would agree with
that. I wouldn't want to see in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
If you can get something from Brandon Roy, because he's playing, about 25 minutes a night, maybe a little less, maybe a little more on some nights.
Yeah.
Against Dallas, he scored 21 points. Really, he just has to be a spot-up shooter now.
There's no doubt.
If you can get 15 points out of Brandon Roy off the bench.
Certainly.
Watch out for this team.
The way Aldridge has played really the entire season, Gerald Wallace obviously being there now. This is a team that, like you said, everyone's got to be scared of. They do not want to face them in the first round because, really, there's still a bit of a question mark as to what you're going to get, who's going to be the guy each night. Brandon Roy, like you said, had a big night the other night, but for the most part, his minutes will be very limited. We've read many articles this year about Brandon Roy and his health. All we could do is just hope that he's healthy in the playoffs so we get to see how good Portland is, because every year they go on a run, we think they're going to do good, and then they are so injured by the time it comes to the playoffs, whether it's their big men or whether it's Brandon Roy. They have not been healthy in the playoffs in recent years, so it would be nice to at least see them fully healthy playing a team that for the regular season was better than them, because they will absolutely battle and take that team as far as they can.
How dangerous is Memphis?
You know what? After watching them a few times recently, I'm wavering on Memphis.
Without
Rudy Gay, we know, and even at the end of the games, we saw Zach Randolph hit a game winner a couple weeks ago, but Rudy's that guy that they normally would go to, and certainly their scoring is going to be down when he's not there. So right now, I don't know that I have a full grasp on what they'll be in the playoffs.
Sure.
But if you see them go into San Antonio as an 8 seed, I don't think there's much hope for them to get out of that. Maybe grab one or two games, but I don't see any reason to think that they could win a first-round matchup.
Yeah, right now it's San Antonio, L.A., Dallas, Oklahoma City, who we haven't talked about yet, Denver, Portland, New Orleans, Memphis. Utah, 2 games back. They're the 9 right now. Phoenix is a half game back of them, and then Houston a half game back there. So Houston's 3 games out of the playoffs with a couple teams to jump. I guess I think the playoffs will end like this. Remember a few weeks ago I picked Phoenix to surprise everyone and get into the playoffs. They're 2.5 games out. It's probably not going to happen.
Nash injured right now is certainly not helping that.
Nope, certainly not. So Memphis, San Antonio would guess be a sweep or a 5-game series.
Yep.
Lakers, New Orleans. Earlier in the year, we thought that New Orleans could have a shot against the Lakers.
Yeah,
they have
with David West and Okafor.
Yeah, they have a great big man defensively. They have a point guard who would terrorize Derek Fisher or Steve Blake. Of course, I think Kobe would match up on Chris Paul, but I can't see New Orleans winning that.
No.
I would say the Lakers are maybe 6, maybe 5 or 6.
I'd either go 4 or 5.
Five. Yeah, five. Dallas, Portland. That's Portland just fantastic beat Dallas. Matchup. And yeah. I don't think Dallas wants to see Portland. I think they'd much rather see New Orleans. Getting that 2 seed would be interesting. I'd still take Dallas. I would take all the favorites. I would take Dallas over Portland, and yeah. I would take Oklahoma City over Denver.
Yeah. That Oklahoma City-Denver matchup, at the very least, will be very fun to watch.
Every time I want Oklahoma City to blow me away and say, okay, we're as good as everyone else, they kind of let me down.
Yeah. Well, now, let's see. Perkins has only played one game with them right now. They play the Heat tonight. So, let's see. With Perkins there, Serge Ibaka the other night with 8 blocks. So, both of those guys provide a force inside that we knew that they were lacking last year. And it's going to be fun to watch them in the playoffs. Obviously, last year with the Lakers matchup, it just wasn't good for them that early in Westbrook and Durant's career to play a team like the Lakers. Now, I believe they have that confidence. I don't see why. Obviously, you know, I think we both agree that they're going to win the first round. And in that second round, it's just going to be a great matchup.
I could see Denver beating them, though, because Denver, they've got these two point guards that are both playing very well right now. We haven't even seen them with Danilo Gallinari. Denver's got a toughness that I don't know that Oklahoma City has. So Denver's so interesting to me. I don't know who's taking their last shot, and that's very important in the playoffs. I don't know who's getting their big buckets. I don't know who's really carrying the load. They're so balanced now. They're very deep. And they're well coached. Denver could upset them.
Yeah, but Perkins is going to add some toughness to that roster in Oklahoma City. So should be good.
So we like the favorites there.
Yeah.
Chicago, Boston, Miami, Orlando, your top 4 seeds. I don't think anybody's going to pick Atlanta, New York, Philadelphia, or Indiana.
Well, Mike Wilbon did pick the New York Knicks over the Miami Heat.
I got to imagine he would change his mind.
I think, you know, 4 days later his mind has changed. I think maybe even 2 days later his mind was changed. But he did pick them to win. He said the big three in New York right now would beat the big three in Miami.
What is the big three? Billups? Are you serious? Yes, Billups makes that prayer three-pointer against the Heat, and everybody goes gaga over him. You people are so stupid. You're all idiots if you think Chauncey Billups is any member of any big three.
Let's not call Wilbon an idiot. I met him in college when I was doing reporting for the Florida State newspaper. He was a great guy. He talked to me for about 20, 30 minutes
while
we watched
the
football
game.
He's a great guy. So.
I'm a big Mike Wilbon fan, but anybody who puts Chauncey Billups in any type of category like that is just total moron. He's not even a top 10 point guard in the NBA. Forget about it.
So you just called him stupid and a moron in the last minute.
Not just Wilbon. I mean, a lot of people out there. A lot of people. It's just moronic to put Chauncey Billups in that category. Yeah. Please give me a break. Philadelphia, though, is an interesting team. I can't see them beating any of those top
four teams.
Boston,
Miami, none of those, yeah.
But they're good. I think they're going to be a tougher out in the playoffs than people would expect.
For sure.
Did you watch the Fab Five documentary?
Not all of it, but for the most part, yeah. Saw the fallout for Jalen Rose recently.
Yeah, so Jalen Rose saying that the Duke players, that Duke recruits Uncle Tom's.
Yeah.
And Grant Hill was not happy about that.
No.
And I don't know where exactly he published his response. I read it in the New York Times in a blog.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was originally published there or not, but I recommend going to the New York Times and reading what Grant Hill said. I'll just give you one line. He said, quote, this is just written, to hint that those who grew up in a household with a mother and father are somehow less black than those who did not is beyond ridiculous, end quote.
Yeah.
And it's pretty interesting, but what Grant Hill wrote was very just well
very
written,
poignant.
Very poignant.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm not really going to talk about this. I don't think we should because we're not qualified, but I do think
certainly
basketball fans should read what he said, and I would love to watch that documentary. I was out of town when it aired, but I'll try to watch it.
I would love to see Jalen and Grant sit down and talk. Obviously, I think they have some air to clear.
Well,
now.
One thing that Hill said in his response was that Jalen Rose tried to reach out to him on Twitter before it aired to apologize.
Yeah.
So he said he knew something was coming,
yeah.
But I don't think he expected that. He was pretty taken aback, and he was pretty disappointed. And Obama taking 4 number 1 seeds. I'm just, come on. What's your final four?
You have a big problem with that.
Again,
I've got two different ones.
Give me your favorite final four.
Ohio State, Kansas, I believe Pitt.
And
Duke. The bottom left?
Right?
Yeah, Duke.
Great. Four number one seeds. Good for you.
No, Pitt's not it. No, they are.
Good for you.
On one bracket, but I know on another bracket I went with a 2 seed. So, but it's difficult. I'm a much bigger NBA fan than I am college basketball, so I tend to look at what the experts are saying.
Is there a player that you're really interested in watching in the tournament?
Jimmy Fredette. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to see if he's got next-level talent or not. I mean, obviously, offensively, the guy can shoot the ball, but we've seen a lot of guys that can shoot the ball who can't make that transition to the NBA. I think Steph Curry's done a great job not only being a shooter but being a point guard, being a guy who gets steals, and adding more elements to his game aside from the shots. I'm just not sure if Jimmer Fredette has those other elements.
My issue with Jimmer is just that I think sometimes he has to be selfish. Let's face it, he's on BYU. They don't have great players around him, but I would like to see him pass more. Sometimes he just hijacks
the game. A lot of 30-footers, 35-footers that don't seem necessary.
It's very exciting. Very exciting to watch.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see Kemba Walker again. I mean, the guy tore it up in the Big East tournament, but he's small.
That's what I was going to say. Can he play the point guard position, or is he one of these guys who's a two in the body of a one?
He reminds me of someone, and I'm not just saying this because of UConn. He reminds me so much of Ben Gordon.
As soon as you started to say that, it's absolutely the second coming.
And
I
love Ben Gordon in college, but I hate him as a pro. Yeah. And I don't know. I worry about Walker. Can he do enough if he's not scoring to help a team on the next level? So that's interesting. I also like Jordan Hamilton a lot at Texas.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on that. There are a lot of great players out there. Harrison Barnes playing great for UNC. Nolan Smith,
Jared Sullinger.
Sullinger's very interesting. I think they're going to lose to Kentucky because I think Kentucky's got Josh Harrelson, a big man who's going to do it. He's got size on Sullinger. I think he'll do a good enough job against Sullinger. And when I've seen Ohio State struggle this year, it's usually because they don't go to him enough. Sometimes they don't give him the ball enough. So keep an eye on that. But that's why I got Kentucky beating them. If, of course, Kentucky can even get out of the first round, because you never know with that team. Power rankings time.
Power rankings. Let's get to it. Would you like me to start? Or would you?
Yeah, you always start, so you can keep
going. I do always start. Well, number one, and this, to me, after a couple weeks ago, I wasn't even sure if this team would remain in the top five, but their run after the All-Star break, 10-1 since the break. They've had wins over.
No.
Let me say it before you go nuts. They've had wins over Atlanta twice, Portland, Oklahoma City.
Oh, Atlanta twice. Wow.
Portland, Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Dallas, and Orlando. Only losses at Miami. Their center in the last six games has gotten 17 rebounds, 16, 12, 14, and 17 rebounds. And they also have a guy named Kobe Bryant on the roster. I'm going to put the LA Lakers currently at the number one spot in my power rankings, because I believe right now, if you start a playoff series with the Lakers versus anyone, any other team, whether they're the road team or the home team, I think right now they're good enough to win that series.
My problem with your power rankings has been the same problem I've had all year with them. You're too whimsical.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they fluctuate.
Why should
way
I
too much?
Lock teams into where I think they are?
I want you to truly believe in a team, not just they're hot. I'm going to put them number one. I'm going to put them
number two. I definitely
believe
in the Lakers. I believed in that, the fact that they would win the Western Conference pretty much all year. I mean, we talked about it at the beginning of the year. You know, obviously San Antonio had this incredible run. I don't really believe I ever thought San Antonio could beat the Lakers in a seven-game series.
I certainly did, and I still do. All right. Lakers
number two, won. This team is 14-2 in the last 16 games. Both losses on the road, because that's what they tend to do. Toronto and Atlanta is where they lost. Current number one seed in the East. You can't say enough about the defense they play. The Chicago Bulls at number two with MVP Derrick Rose. At number three, even though they had a huge loss in Miami, which reinforces that this team can be dominated, they also did dominate Miami at home. And, of course, if you have the best record in the league, you're going to be playing four games out of a seven-game series at home. So the Spurs, for me right now, are the number three team. And, obviously, they lost to the number four team by 30, but they, you know, like I said, beat them just a week ago. So the Heat, for me, are number four. Seemingly back on track after that five-game stumble. Still just got to monitor the overall confidence and emotion of this team. I think they have an emotional coach, and they have emotional players. Those two things don't really go together.
You're talking about the Heat?
Yes.
It's always less about emotions than we think. It's more about talent and more about execution and more about overall quality of your team and less
about
emotions.
But look at the players that make the team. We know Chris Bosh is an emotional person.
Forget it. The NBA is full of emotional players. It's not about emotions.
It's
about execution.
A whole team that is like this.
No, it's not.
It really is.
No,
it
really
is. So them, for me, that confidence, whatever role that they go into the playoffs with, and if they wipe out the team they face in the first round, it's very possible that they might even get a second round 4-1 or even a sweep. This team, again, can be the best in the world. I just don't see
them. Greg Urbano says the Miami Heat are happy they're going to beat everyone.
Yeah, that could happen. That's my thing, is they need a therapist, a team therapist, to make sure their mind is in the right spot.
Oh, well, if only we had known that. They should replace Spoelstra with Dr. Phil.
Why not?
Dr. Phil Jackson.
Okay. He might call better plays down the stretch.
Go ahead.
We'll see. At number five, the Boston Celtics barely holding on for me right now. They've lost three of the last four to bad teams, as you mentioned. Clippers, 76ers, and New Jersey Nets. They haven't scored over 90 in three games. Rondo is struggling a lot recently, especially since the trade of Kendrick Perkins, which I didn't expect. I expected their defense to get a little bit worse, but to see Rondo not doing as well without Kendrick Perkins, big surprise there. And I read today
that he's a bad March player every year, historically.
The whole team is a bad March team, as we mentioned. I mean, this is just what happens to them after the All-Star break. They do tend to struggle.
So then why are you being lulled into this trap
of
thinking that the Celtics are not as good.
I know that they're not as good.
You're being lulled into the trap. You know this happens every year.
They're not as good as the Bulls or the Heat. When they get into the playoffs, are they going to give the Bulls an incredible series if they play? Absolutely. We know that. Ray Allen's going to hit these clutch shots at the end of the game that you're like, how does anybody do that? Paul Pierce is going to hit some shots. Kevin Garnett's just going to be a monster. We know that they're going to do that, but I still feel that the Bulls and Heat are better at this moment.
The Bulls to you are like the Spurs to me. Yeah. I believe in them, I think, more than most people do, and I think you believe
But you've talked about their defense, and
yeah, I know, but I still pick them to win the championship.
You've got to get stops in the stretch, and especially we play a team with Kobe Bryant on the roster, your defense has to be good enough to get stops.
They're not a bad defensive team, though. Just right now they're struggling.
They're average.
And they're probably above average.
So to recap, Lakers, Bulls, Spurs, Heat, Celtics. Let's see how
different. We got to do these power rankings less often because they really change.
Good.
So wait, I wanted to write yours down. Sorry, Lakers.
Yep. Lakers 1, Bulls 2.
Okay. Heat.
Spurs 3.
Heat
4, Celtics 5.
We don't even have the same 5.
That's good. It might be a first for the year.
Yeah. I had the Heat originally at number 5, but they're out.
They're not even in your top 5.
For Dallas. All right. Dallas.
Wow.
Spurs 1, Celtics 2, Bulls 3, Lakers 4. Dallas 5.
What has Boston done for you to think right now in this season that they're better than the Chicago Bulls?
They won the East last year.
Last year. It's a different team. And the Chicago Bulls team is so much
it's
better than they were last
year.
But the Bulls are
so much
better.
They're absolutely better. And that's why they're number 3 in the power rankings.
Wow.
But the Celtics are the most clutch team. They always find ways to win. If they don't get home court advantage, I might pick the Bulls.
Okay.
That I definitely might.
Definitely might. Definitely maybe.
I definitely will consider it. I will consider it. Whereas I've been pretty obnoxious about the Celtics winning the East. But I'll open my mind if the Bulls grab home court advantage, considering that they are 30-4 at home.
Yeah.
Big difference. Ridiculous. Yeah, but I still think the Spurs and the Celtics. Something about the Bulls. You know, is there one player in the starting lineup, if the Celtics get Shaq back in their starting lineup, is there one player that's just not productive? Is it Shaq for the Celtics?
Yeah, I mean, as far as offensive production?
Yeah, but you know, for the Bulls, does Keith Bogans do anything?
No,
I know when Boozer was out on Tuesday, he had a big game, and Noah was out too.
Yeah.
But their shooting guards just aren't good enough for me.
They're not great. I mean, obviously, that's their weakest position.
Do the Celtics have a weakness if Shaq is healthy?
Yes.
What?
I mean, the center position, he's still not that good.
I mean, maybe low post scoring, but I wouldn't say the center position because they get enough scoring that they don't need low post scoring, and they have Kristic.
I don't even think that they get enough scoring. They haven't scored over 90 in 3 games now. I mean, obviously, yes, Ray Allen is going to play better in the playoffs. We expect Paul Pierce to be even better.
Rondo's going to play better. That's the key.
You would assume
he scored
so.
2 points in each of the last 2 games. Yeah. He's been horrible. He's not that bad. You know that. If he just has decent games, they don't lose 3 of their last 4. Probably not.
Probably not. Maybe definitely, as you would say.
They definitely might not lose those games. So Urbano goes Lakers, Bulls, Spurs, Heat, Celtics. I go Spurs, Celtics, Bulls, Lakers, Dallas.
All right.
Yeah.
Shall we get to the email?
Oh, yeah, the email. The email came from Jamie.
One of the best emails we've ever
received.
Jamie
wrote us on March 4th, a couple weeks ago. Yep. We don't read a lot of emails. We usually run out of time, but Jamie wrote a funny email. You guys are killing me. Where are you? On an early spring break? How am I supposed to digest all that trade deadline action without your podcast? Keep this up and I'll have to listen to Ryan Russolo. And that's liable to give me an upset stomach. I don't even know who that is.
I don't either, but we just trashed him.
So I need Greg to give me a reality check on the Knicks. Has Adam gone totally Charlie Sheen with Tiger Blood enthusiasm?
Winning.
Was that win at Miami really about Mike D'Antoni out-coaching Eric Spoelstra? No, it wasn't. Seriously, can they make the second round conference finals? When does Billups not get his team to the Eastern Finals?
Mm-hmm.
This year, because he stinks. Come June, are they going to dump Chauncey anyway to make a big run at CP3? That's a good question. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they will. I don't think they will. See, CP3's got another year, so does Darren Williams, unless they sign extensions.
Yeah.
I think they'll re-sign Chauncey Billups for $14 million. They'll pick up his option for $14 million, and he'll play one more year. And then in 2012, they'll start looking at another point guard. Okay, so you know he has some other questions, but he does talk about the trade deadline. Since the trade deadline, I think the trades have been less impactful overall than I thought. Now, part of that is because Kendrick Perkins hasn't played. The Celtics have struggled. when Jeff Green's been there. Not that it's been his fault. Carmelo, we talked already about him. The Nuggets appear to be the big winners of the trade deadline. And Nets,
Portland,
actually.
And Portland. I love
Gerald Wallace. Is it about Gerald Wallace or is it about Brandon Roy being healthy?
Well, it's both, but Gerald Wallace adds such a dimension that this team hasn't really had in recent years. They've always had threes that could shoot the ball from the outside but didn't really go inside and battle and rebound. And now you've got a guy who's a three that could also play like a four and at times also hit the jump shot. So to me, Gerald Wallace was always one of the most underrated players in the league, and to send him to one of the most underrated teams in the league only makes him that much more dangerous.
He seems to be a good fit for Portland, doesn't he?
Perfect fit.
Yeah, you know, just something about him, maybe his work ethic seems to fit Nate McMillan. I would say that the Nets actually, even not that they're tearing it up or anything, but they've won five games in a row. They're putting themselves in the discussion for the playoffs in that they keep saying we think we can make the playoffs, but no, they really can't make the playoffs.
Well, I mean, what they're also doing is, I think, calming the nerves of Deron Williams. They're saying, you know what, there is a decent team here if you stay.
That's true. It's a good
you
point.
You re-sign, we'll get you another superstar, we're going to be able to convince somebody with the money that we have and make this not only, you know, the second team in New York, we can make them one of the, you know, the top teams in the Eastern Conference.
But I would say the surprise to me is that the additions of Mike Bibby for the Heat and Troy Murphy for the Celtics don't seem to be doing much of anything.
No, I was at the Heat game when Bibby first played.
Standing O!
The standing ovation that he received from the crowd was just, to me, it was pretty crazy. I didn't expect them to react that way. I didn't think that the fans in general thought that he was a savior, but it seemed like at the very first moment that he entered the game, they thought he was. Now I think they realize that. Actually, Mario Chalmers maybe has been playing even better because of the Bibby transition. So maybe that is the best part of getting Bibby, is that you pushed Mario Chalmers to play a little better.
Yeah, if Chalmers is at the top of his game, he's better than Bibby probably for the Heat because he's a better defensive player. And in terms of knocking down jumpers, that's why they brought Bibby over. He was leading the league in three-point percentage. I don't know if he still is, but he hasn't just had the impact I thought he would have. In fact, when they got Mike Bibby, I was kind of angry. I was like, you know what? That really bothers me. We got to do something about this. They get Bibby. The Celtics get Troy Murphy.
You mean they have to do something about guys
the league has to
being bought out and
this.
Then signing with whoever they want?
Yeah, it just doesn't seem right to me. I don't know. It's not competitive. It's very annoying.
Well, the entire NBA right now has got to kind of take a look at what's going on.
Absolutely.
And are we just going to basically collect talent in the big cities and then leave all these small market teams to just kind of work on the draft, and then as soon as these guys' contracts are up, they hijack themselves
Absolutely.
To these other places?
So they need to address that this summer.
Yeah.
They need to. Even if it means a lockout, even if it means losing games, this is not good for the NBA. It's going to be really tough for small market teams to win the championship.
You know, it's fun for the fans
except
of those
for the Spurs.
Cities.
The Spurs are a total exception, but they've been so lucky.
Yeah.
They almost lost Tim Duncan.
Yeah.
They're lucky that they didn't. But it's tough for these small. I mean, I feel bad for the Pacers. I feel bad for the Bucks.
Milwaukee Bucks, any of those
teams. I feel bad for these teams.
Minnesota.
They're going to have tough times. Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, guys get drafted with them, and they play in Europe because they don't want to play in Minnesota.
Yeah.
So I think we're done rambling now. It's just been so long.
Yeah.
In fact, Greg and I, we haven't even spoken in like 3 or 4 weeks because if we're not doing the podcast,
try not to.
We just avoid each other.
Just look the other way.
Yeah,
that's the best policy.
It's usually how it works. Everybody, if you want to send us an email, we'll try to read it. CBSI podcast feedback at CBS.com. CBSI podcast feedback at CBS.com. It's the letter I.
And thank you, Jamie, for one of the best.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
A long time.
Thank you, Greg Urbano. Thank you to all of our listeners. I'm Adam Azer. We'll be back next week.